Hi, welcome to the Plant Paradox Summary from Growth.me. This is an 8 simple lessons about from this book. The author is Dr. Stephen R. Gundry, MD. It's first published in 2017. The Plant Paradox says lectins are bad. Lectins are proteins hidden in some plants like grains, beans, and tomatoes. Dr. Gundry claims they cause many health problems rampant today, like obesity, diabetes, and autoimmune diseases. And if you avoid lectin-producing plants, you will lose weight, live longer, and feel better. Here's the top quote from this book. All New World plants have troublesome lectins that most of mankind has eaten for no more than 500 years. Even Native Americans came from Asia, so these plants are new for all of us. End quote. And the first lesson from this book is the modern health paradox, living longer but sicker. In the Western world, there's a feeling that we are healthier than past people. The news shows us new medical research, treatments, and advances daily. However, these headlines obscure the truth that the average person's about the average health person's health today. It is true we are living longer than average. From 1960 to 2013, the average life expectancy rose about 10 years for someone living in America. In other words, if you're born today, you can expect to survive 10 years longer than someone born in 1960. Pretty good, right? Well, not exactly. The truth is, this rise in life expectancy is mostly thanks to modern medicine becoming better at saving us from dying. Child mortality is a prime example of this. Today, only 6 out of every 1,000 kids die before reaching 1 year old, yet back in 1935, it was 56 kids out of 1,000 that died. That's 10 times more than today. And it's mostly thanks to better medicines, treatments, and hygiene. So modern medicine has become very good at helping us not die when we're really sick. If we have a chronic illness, we can manage it through medications. If you have a bad heart valve or cancer, we can go through sophisticated surgeries and treatments. Yet aside from life expectancy, other health statistics paint a declining picture. Starting in the 1960s, there was a rise in obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, arthritis, dementia, heart, and autoimmune diseases. So, Dr. Gundry starts his book, The Plant Paradox, by posing a question. We are living longer, but are we living better? This is something really worth considering, because is it really worth it to postpone death and live 10 years longer if the last 30 years of our lives are a slow degeneration? All right, so who is Dr. Gundry and why listen to him? Well, he's an accomplished doctor and surgeon. During his 30-year career as a heart surgeon at Loma Linda University, he completed thousands of operations. He actually holds the world record for the longest surviving transplant of a pig's heart to a baboon. He was even innovative as a surgeon, inventing some devices used medically during his career. Why did he write this book? Well, he explains it this way. Many of the patients who came to see him for surgery, they struggled with being overweight or underweight and always feeling sick, tired, in pain, or no energy. And strange thing was, many of these patients thought they were eating healthy and living healthy, yet they were taking an average of 7 drugs when they came to him, and they were there for heart surgery or they had some kind of autoimmune disease. Dr. Gundry himself was 70 pounds overweight before, despite believing that he was also living in a healthy way. Well, Dr. Gundry is now convinced that most of what we've been told about healthy eating is wrong. For example, most people still believe that eating a whole grain bagel washed down with a glass of orange juice is a healthy breakfast. It's not, and we'll learn why soon. The ideas presented in this book are based on Dr. Gundry's practical experience advising his clients what to eat and not eat, and then observing patterns of what actually helped in lab test results, especially blood tests measuring triglyceride, cholesterol, and other measures. And he says that he's found a diet and eating lifestyle that can make anyone feel more energized and live longer without weight issues. How? It all starts with lectins. So, summary of this first lesson, our life expectancy has been rising, but so has the rate of obesity, diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, autoimmune diseases, and many more. People often struggle with obesity, chronic pain, or no energy. What can explain this paradox? Dr. Gundry says lectins are the secret culprit behind many of our rampant health problems today. Lesson number two, what are lectins? Need to start off talking about the natural world. Nature is all about eating and avoiding being eaten. Many psychologists even say the survival instinct is our most primal and powerful animal drive for all animals and creatures. And to survive, animals have developed all kinds of defenses, including claws, teeth, and fast legs. Well, plants, which are also part of nature, are no exception to this rule. They also want to avoid being eaten. And while it looks like they're sitting there helplessly, they're not. Plants have also developed many sophisticated defense mechanisms through evolution. First, plants have the simple physical defenses, like the hard shell of a walnut that protects the seed inside, or the spiky branches of a rose bush that ward off herbivores. But that's not all. Plants also have sophisticated biochemical defenses that are hidden at first sight. We all know that some plants are poisonous. Other plants, like poison ivy, will give us a nasty rash if you touch it. Or if you eat an inedible plant, well, you won't die, but you will get very sick, and we all know this. Now, what if many plants also had a hidden and more subtle defense mechanism? One that doesn't make us sick today, but slowly and relentlessly is undermining our health. Well, this is what Dr. Gundry is proposing. He says there are things called lectins, hidden inside many of the plants and vegetables that we eat every day, including many of those that we all consider healthy. Lectins are toxic compounds found in many raw plants. They're a type of carbohydrate-binding protein. Now, gluten may be the most well-known lectin today because of the whole gluten-free craze. And while certain people are sensitive to gluten, Dr. Gundry says that gluten is just the tip of the iceberg, and there are many more lectins which are slowly ruining our health. Many of these lectins were designed by plants as protection against their most common predators, insects. The lectins were designed to sicken, paralyze, or weaken any insect that tried to eat them. In fact, many genetically modified plants work this way, by borrowing lectin-producing genes from other organisms. BT corn, for example, it's a GMO corn that is very popular in the US today. It borrows a gene from a soil bacteria so that when certain larvae try to eat it, they die because of this lectin it can now produce. And BT corn is widely grown in the US. It's fed to a lot of livestock and used to sweeten soft drinks and baked goods in the form of high fructose corn syrup. Of course, humans are a thousand times bigger than insects, maybe a million times bigger, so there will be a much smaller effect. But perhaps eating these lectins regularly makes us feel unwell, foggy-headed, or wreaks havoc with our body's gut and immune system. Well, Dr. Gundry says this is exactly what's happening, and that lectins are responsible for many of the health crises that modern people are facing. As a quick sneak peek at the plant paradox diet, here's a quick list of foods to avoid and to eat, and we'll explore and explain all these in a lot more detail in just a few minutes. So first, the foods that you should avoid that contain lectins. First, grains, including wheat, quinoa, rice, and corn, including whole grain foods. Second, legumes like beans, soy, lentils, peas, also cashews and peanuts, which are also actually legumes. Third, nightshades like tomatoes, cucumbers, squash, sweet or hot peppers, and eggplants. Fourth, any industrially farmed meat or fish, because they're fed those lectin-containing grains, and that winds up in the meat. Okay, and now the foods that you should or can eat, which are free of lectins, here they are. First, cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, and Brussels sprouts. Second, leafy greens like spinach and romaine lettuce. Third, certain oils including olive, perilla, coconut, and sesame oil. Fourth, nuts like macadamia, walnuts, pecans, and so on. Fifth, naturally fed meats like wild-caught fish, pasture-raised chicken, and grass-fed beef. And resistant starch foods like sweet potatoes, yams, and unripened bananas. Again, we'll cover all these in more detail later and why they're good to eat or not good. So, summary of lesson two. Like any organism, plants don't want to be eaten, so they have many defense systems. This includes producing lectins designed to hurt insects who try eating them. And Dr. Gundry says lectins also cause problems to the human gut and immune system, and therefore they are responsible for many chronic health problems that modern people face. Now lesson three. Why are lectins a problem only now? So if lectins have been hiding in certain plants all along, then why are they only causing these major health issues now? Well, Dr. Gundry mentioned several reasons in his book, and here are two main ones. First, the agricultural revolution. For 5 to 8 million years, the earliest human ancestors ate whatever they could find, forage, or hunt. Foods like roots, tubers, nuts, fruits, vegetables, leaves, fish, insects, deer, mammoths, and so on. Then around 10,000 years ago, something big happened, the agricultural revolution. We realized that when you put food and seeds into the ground, that makes more food grow in a few months. Amazing. This was the agricultural revolution, and it caused cataclysmic changes to human diets, lifestyles, and cultures. We began eating very differently. And grains and beans became a primary part of our diets for the first time ever. Was this a positive change? Well, in many ways it was. Rather than needing to go out and find tomorrow's food every day, people can now reliably grow mass amounts of food. More importantly, we could store it for the future, providing security to us in winters, droughts, and hard times. Yet on the other hand, the early agricultural people actually took a couple steps back compared to their ancestors. First, living in cities promoted more spread of diseases and plagues. And also, there's evidence from x-ray analysis of many Egyptian mummies, which was, you know, one of the earliest big agricultural civilizations we know of. These mummies, so many of them suffered from high levels of clogged arteries, osteoarthritis, and tooth decay. Okay, and the second reason why lectins are a problem only now is the discovery of the New World. Around 500 years ago, European people reached North America by ship for the first time. In this new world, they found thousands of new plants and animal species that, again, radically transformed our diets. For example, we usually think of tomatoes as Italian and potatoes as Irish, but both these foods only arrived 500 years ago in these countries. Even corn was never touched by a European before then. What does this mean? Well, the first thing to understand is that evolution is a very slow process. For an animal to truly adapt to digesting a new type of food, it could take millions of years. So 500 years is a blink of an eye. Or even 12,000 years if you're like Native or South American. It's such a small amount of time compared to, you know, 8 million years. And this means every day we are eating new and unfamiliar plants that contain lectins our bodies are unprepared to process. Well, if this is happening, then why haven't humans noticed it to now? Well, here's one way Dr. Gundry explains it. He says that in the wild, an animal that feels unwell after eating a certain plant would learn to stop eating it. And now here's a quote from the book. Unfortunately, modern humans aren't so savvy. Instead, if we eat something that doesn't agree with us or makes us sick, we find or invent something, think Nexium, a stomach acid reducer, or a drug such as ibuprofen that lessens pain, so we can continue to eat a substance designed to destroy, cause pain in, or at least weaken us. End quote. Okay, summary of the third lesson. The real solution to many chronic health issues is to eat the way our archaic ancestors did again. The kinds of foods humans have been eating and thriving on for millions of years. And we can learn to avoid the lectin-containing plants brought on by the agricultural revolution and discovery of the new world. And this brings us to lesson number four. How exactly do lectins make us sick and overweight? Well, in short, they confuse our immune system and make our body attack itself. Here's a slightly longer explanation. Your food travels through your intestinal tract, and your body has a very difficult job there. It must allow some nutrients to pass through the intestine wall, but stop other unwanted molecules from invading your body. Well, when you eat certain plants, their lectins enter your intestinal tract where they attach to cells. These lectins attach to cells, creating a compound called zonulin. And the thing is, the wall around your small intestine is only one cell thick. It needs to be that thin to easily let nutrients exit. But usually it can hold together well. But zonulin creates small holes in this wall, and unwanted molecules can then begin leaking from your intestines to other parts of your body where they shouldn't be, like your blood, your soft tissue, and brain. At that point, it's your immune system's job to attack and get rid of these foreign molecules. But at this point, another thing that often happens is called molecular mimicry. This means the foreign molecules look very similar to legitimate molecules in your body. Just like how in nature, there's like a stick insect that disguises itself as something else to survive. Dr. Gundry says this is a purposeful strategy plants use to attack their predators. So these molecules look similar to your legitimate molecules. And since your immune system's radar system can't tell the difference between foreign and native molecules, it actually begins attacking the ones that you need too. It's a type of friendly fire. Dr. Gundry says this is the true cause of autoimmune diseases, which have been skyrocketing in the last 40 years, and many other illnesses. Recent theories have also pointed to molecular mimicry as possibly responsible for a systemic low-grade inflammation that might cause obesity and type 2 diabetes. Okay, that was a lot of science in a short time. Now for a quick fact check. Is what Dr. Gundry is saying about lectins true? This book has been roundly criticized by many sources, from online reviewers who say the book is poorly ghostwritten and he only wants to make money selling supplements, to credible critiques of his diet, like an article by T. Colin Campbell, author of the book The China Study. Campbell, he criticized some of the sloppy references in the book, which means sometimes Dr. Gundry makes an argument with a reference, like a footnote, but if you actually follow the reference, the study he references doesn't always prove what Dr. Gundry said or claimed, and this makes it difficult to trust all his claims, and especially his more novel health claims like the ones about lectin. On the other hand, there is proof that eating certain foods containing lectins increases intestine permeability and inflammation, a scientific proof. For example, there's good evidence that eating gluten increases intestine permeability, but only in patients with celiac disease who are specifically sensitive to it. Also, leaky gut also seems to be a real health issue with negative consequences, but few scientists or doctors would say it's a primary cause of most major diseases like Dr. Gundry does. In short, there really is a lack of evidence. If you do follow the plant paradox diet, you will undoubtedly be eating extremely healthy. But is it truly necessary to cut out all the grains and legumes to be healthy? Well, maybe not. Probably not. Although if you do have some kind of autoimmune disease, then this diet could be a lifesaver, as many of the examples used in the book were his patients who had some kind of autoimmune disease. All right, back to lectins and intestine permeability. And now we need to talk about NSAIDs. NSAIDs it's short for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, are today very popular to relieve mild pain, fever, and inflammation. These drugs include ibuprofen under the names Advil and Motrin, naproxen under the name Aleve, Celebrex, and many others. These NSAIDs were developed in the 1970s and marketed as a safer alternative to aspirin because long-term use of aspirin had been found to damage the stomach lining. The drug companies celebrated finding a new, safer alternative. However, what really happened was the gastroscopes being used at the time in the 70s could only look as deep as the stomach lining where aspirin was doing damage, but they couldn't look deeper into the small intestine. Well, using new technologies like pill cameras, it's now clear that NSAIDs damage the mucosal lining deeper in the small intestine. This lining is our first line of defense, slowing down and stopping lectins and other foreign particles from breaching your gut. And this means if you take NSAIDs too much, then you'll probably have even more issues with foreign molecules escaping your gut and intestines. The good news is there are a couple natural alternatives to NSAIDs like Boswellia and white willow bark. Science studies have shown that these can help to reduce inflammation and mild pain, so it's worth trying out those natural alternatives instead. So, summary of lesson 4. In your intestinal tract, lectins attach to cells and create a compound called zonulin. Zonulin opens tiny holes in your intestinal tract that allow unwanted molecules to invade your body, and then your immune system tries to attack those molecules, but often ends up attacking your body itself. This creates autoimmune diseases, and Dr. Gundry says many other health issues, if not most of them. Okay, lesson number 5. Avoid grains and legumes which are high in bad lectins. Now we'll dive into the more practical aspects of the food and what you should eat and not eat. Follow Dr. Gundry's diet. Well, rule number 1 in the book is, here's a quote, "What you stop eating has far more impact on your health than what you start eating," end quote. And here are the major three major categories of food that Dr. Gundry says everyone should stop eating. First, grains like wheat, rice, corn, and oats. Second, legumes like beans, soy, and peas. And third, modern industrial meat. Let's start with the first one. Grains like wheat, rice, corn, and oats. Since the agricultural revolution, grains have been a foundation of human diets. Most people in the world today eat staple foods like bread and rice every single day. Yet Dr. Gundry says these foods are high in lectins and should be avoided. Recent health books like Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis and Grain Brain by Dr. David Perlmutter have shone a light on some of the negative effects of grains, especially on the human brain. Yet, this is still a relatively unpopular contrarian point of view compared to mainstream health advice, which often recommends whole grains. The official food pyramid used to recommend 6 to 11 servings of grain every day, more than any other food group. Well, we know now that that advice was terrible, but mainstream medical authorities like the Mayo Clinic still say grains are a healthy part of a diet, especially whole grains, which are much higher in fiber and nutrients than processed or refined grains. Yet, are whole grains really healthier? Dr. Gundry says that seems like common sense now, yet when you look at Asia, for thousands of years, people there ate white rice, and they went to a lot of effort to clean the rice and process of that bran and make it white. And these places like China, Japan, and Korea traditionally have had lower obesity, heart disease, and diabetes rates compared to Western countries. And Dr. Gundry says that more lectins are actually found in the outside bran of rice. Therefore, white rice contains less of a hit of lectins, and the same is true for other traditional white foods like French baguettes and Italian pasta. Well, maybe all these cultures processed or refined their grains for hundreds of years because they could feel it was easier for their bodies to process. Maybe that's true. Next, food to avoid, legumes like beans, soy, peas, lentils, and chickpeas contain more lectins than any other food group. Peanuts and cashews also happen to fall into this category of legumes as they're not really nuts because they hang separate from the fruit of the plant. So, raw beans are so toxic because of their lectins. Eating just 5 raw kidney beans will clog the red blood cells in your body within minutes, causing nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. The Center for Disease Control says 20% of food poisoning cases in the U.S. are caused by undercooked beans. The good news is, properly cooking beans will remove most of these lectins and make them safe to eat. Dr. Gundry says you should use a modern one-touch pressure cooker to really make sure all those lectins are gone or disabled. He says if you pressure cook legumes, later you can slowly introduce some back into your diet. Okay, and the next food group to not stop eating is modern industrial meat, and here's why. Most of the meat in your local supermarket was fed a lectin-heavy diet. The cows weren't wandering around fields chewing grass. They were fed corn, soy, and other grains in a cramped warehouse. The chickens weren't pecking for insects and seeds outside. They were again fed corn, soy, and wheat. Even some fish farms are beginning to switch to corn. Rather than feeding their larger fish, a more natural diet of fish meal and fish oil. Does this matter? Yes. What an animal eats changes the nutritional content of its meat. For example, carnivorous fish, like salmon, that eat smaller fish, have far more omega-3 content than when they're fed an unnatural diet high in grains. And that's a big reason people want to eat more fish. It's to consume those healthy omega-3 fats. On top of this, Dr. Gundry says that when chickens or cows eat grains, all those lectins from the grains end up in their meat, and then you eat it. This is true even for organic meats, which just means the animals ate organic grains and corn full of lectins. Here's a quote. Rule number 4, you are what the thing you are eating ate. Quote from Dr. Gundry. Here's another thing to think about. A farmer's goal is to make their animals big and plump enough to sell in the quickest and cheapest way. All farmers know that cows can't get very fat eating grass outside, so they feed them corn and grains. Even pigs are relatively lean animals when living in nature as wild boars. So, if grains and corn are the most efficient way of making farm animals fat, what effect do you think they have on human animals? So here's the summary of lesson 5. Avoid grains like wheat, rice, and corn because they contain many lectins. This includes whole grains. Also, avoid legumes like beans, peas, and soy, unless you pressure cook them, which disables the lectins. Also, avoid most supermarket meat that is fed grains. Go for grass-fed beef, pasture-raised chickens, or wild-caught fish instead. Now lesson 6. Eat more good fats and vegetables, much less sugar or carbs and protein. Most people don't know that our bodies can actually burn 2 different types of fuel for energy, either sugar or fat. This is called metabolic flexibility. The first type of fuel we can burn is glucose, which is a type of simple sugar. When you eat foods high in sugar or carbohydrates like fruits, white potatoes, bread, or pasta, then your body runs on glucose. And normally this wouldn't be a problem, but because the modern person's diet is so high in sugar and carbohydrates, it's constantly spiking your blood sugar and provoking a chronic insulin response and chronic inflammation. And this can eventually, and often does, lead to type 2 diabetes and a chronic inflammation that seems to be a big contributor to most diseases, especially in old age. Now, the second type of fuel is ketones, a type of fat. If glucose isn't available, then the mitochondria in your cells switch to burning ketones. And there's good scientific evidence that this leads to quicker weight loss and improved brain function. If you follow the Plant Paradox diet, which is high in vegetables and healthy fats, then this fuel change will naturally happen. Now let's talk about fruit. Is fruit as bad as candy? In the past, health advice often recommended eating more fruits and vegetables, as if they were one category of food, you know, that always went together, fruits and vegetables. In reality, fruits contain a lot of sugar in the form of fructose that vegetables don't contain. And we already know why it's important to eat less sugar, natural or not. Fruits do contain some fiber and nutrients, but nothing that isn't more available by eating vegetables. Although fruit is natural, the way modern people eat it is not. Before modern supermarkets, humans could only eat fruit when it was ripe and in season, that's when it's available, which generally means a few weeks or months before winter. And during fruit season, animals tend to gorge and eat as much fruit as possible. And this was probably a good survival strategy for making it through winter. And it's probably no accident that our close relatives, the great apes, are highly efficient at storing fat during fruit-rich periods. That's a quote from the Reed Department of Education. However, in modern society, high sugar food that we are designed to gorge on is probably now contributing to the obesity epidemic. And so Dr. Gundry says that fruit is pretty much as bad as candy. However, he does say that you can eat certain green or unripened tropical fruits like green bananas, mangoes, and papayas. When these fruits are unripe, they have much lower fructose or sugar content, and they also contain good and healthy resistant starches. Okay, and now we'll get to the Dr. Gundry recommended food list. We've talked a lot about what not to eat. Now here's a quick and rough list of what foods you should eat to follow a lectin-free diet. And Dr. Gundry also published a great food list on his own website that's, you know, even more detailed. You can just search for Dr. Gundry food list on Google and you'll find his list. It's first, cruciferous vegetables, as many of them as possible, including broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, bok choy, and kale. Second, leafy greens, as many as possible, including spinach, romaine lettuce, and arugula. Next, Dr. Gundry recommends eating other vegetables, including carrots, onions, garlic, celery, radishes, artichokes, asparagus, mushrooms, and so on. Herbs like cilantro, basil, parsley, and mint. Almost all herbs, except for hot chili peppers or chili powder. Also, you can eat a lot of good fats like nuts, especially pistachios, walnuts, macadamia nuts, and pecans. Oils like extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, coconut oil, flaxseed oil, sesame seed oil, Thrive algae oil, perilla oil, and MCT oil. And I'll explain a couple of those that are lesser known. First, perilla oil. Dr. Gundry is a big fan of this oil. It's very popular in Asian countries like Korea, but virtually unheard of in America. Yet, perilla oil has one of the highest proportions of omega-3 fatty acids of any vegetable oil. Next, MCT oil, short for medium chain triglycerides. This oil usually comes from coconut oil and has many proven health benefits. Another type of good fat comes from fish and shellfish, preferably wild caught. This includes sardines, herring, and salmon. These contain healthy omega-3 type of fats in large amounts. Avoid nightshade vegetables like tomatoes. This is a specific category of vegetable that Dr. Gundry says that most people should avoid. These are the so-called nightshade family of vegetables, which are from the New World. You know, they were only discovered in North America 500 years ago, and they contain many lectins, especially in the skin and seeds. And these include tomatoes, eggplants, white potatoes, peppers, both sweet and spicy, squash, and zucchini. All right, so summary of lesson 6. When you eat too many fruits, white potatoes, and carbs, then your body runs on glucose or sugar. Too much of this can lead to diabetes and chronic inflammation, a factor in many diseases. However, when you eat green vegetables, nuts, healthy oils, fish, and so on, then your body runs on ketones, a type of fat. Studies show this contributes to faster weight loss and better brain function. Now we come to lesson 7. Just taking care of your gut buddies, aka microbiome. This is very interesting. Did you know that there are hundreds of trillions of little organisms living in your intestinal tract, inside your mouth, and on your skin? It's all over you and inside you. The average person has 1.5 kilograms of bacteria living in their gut, what Dr. Gundry calls our gut bugs. Sounds a little gross, but we actually have a symbiotic relationship with these microbes, which means they're good for us. We feed them, and in return, they help us break down certain foods that we can't digest on our own. Some scientists are even starting to believe these gut bugs are part of our immune system too, helping keep our bodies safe. Experiments done raising germ-free mice without a microbiome show they lived shorter lives, grew smaller, and got sick easier. Well, until recently, this has been not very known about. Most scientists and doctors didn't know how important the microbiome was, yet there is increasing evidence coming out that keeping our gut microbiome balanced properly is a critical part of health. For example, there's growing evidence that our gut microbes control what foods we crave, at least partially. How? Well, our gut bugs are constantly sending and receiving signals with our brain through something called the vagus nerve. And hard to believe, but science says it's true. There are more neurons in our guts than any other place in our body aside from the brain itself. That's why doctors have started to call our guts our second brain. Now, this is quite a shocking thing to hear, I think, and a little creepy. It means that we have cravings, we have feelings and desires about what to eat that are not controlled by us, but by these little microbes or bacteria inside of us. An article published by the University of California, San Francisco scientist put it this way, quote, "Microbes in the gastrointestinal tract are under selective pressure to manipulate host eating behavior to increase their fitness, sometimes at the expense of host fitness," end quote. Translating that to plain English, Dr. Gundry explains that an obese person will usually have bad gut bugs that make them crave junk food. Then they eat the junk food, which feeds those bad gut bugs and not the good ones, and resulting in them sending more signals, more cravings. It's a vicious circle. However, it's also possible to change which gut bugs you have, which families of gut bugs are living inside of you. If you eat healthy foods and probiotics, then you will literally starve the bad bugs out of your system. They will be replaced with good gut bugs that thrive on those healthy foods like salads and smoothies and the good oils, and then those will make us crave more of the good foods. Dr. Gundry says he's seen many patients who before came to him and they could only enjoy eating meat and potatoes, but after a few weeks on a healthy diet, they are amazed that they begin craving salads. And that's why Dr. Gundry's second rule in this book is, and here's a quote, "Rule number two, pay attention to the care and feeding of your gut bugs and they will handle the care and feeding of you. After all, you are their home," end quote. So let's talk about how to nurture your good gut bugs. And this includes probiotics, prebiotics, vitamin D3, and avoiding most artificial sweeteners. We'll go through these one by one in a little more detail. First, probiotics. You've probably already heard of probiotics. These are living good bacteria found in certain foods, and they can help to repopulate your gut with those good gut bugs. These are naturally found in fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, miso, kombucha, tea, and so on. Now, if you're buying yogurt, just make sure the package says it contains active or live bacterial cultures. If they're dead, they can't do you much good. They can't, you know, start living in your gut and multiplying. And there are also probiotic supplements that you can take in pill form, which are a good idea, and you'll find those in any pharmacy. We don't have enough time to explore those here. Next, prebiotics. Now, this is something different. Prebiotics are like fertilizer, preparing the soil for your gut bugs to grow more easily. Prebiotics are like non-digestible carbohydrates, which means you can't digest them, but your gut buddies can. It's like food for your gut bugs. Prebiotics are found in, first, resistant starches. This is in yams, sweet potatoes, turnips, parsnips, plantains, taro root, celery root, and some unripe tropical fruits like green bananas, mangoes, and papayas. Okay, so these are resistant starches. These are different than regular starches like those found in white potatoes because those normal starches are very quickly digested by our bodies and they create unhealthy blood sugar spikes. These resistant starches, on the other hand, can't be digested by us. That's why they're called resistant. Instead, your gut buddies feed on them, converting them into fats for your body to use as fuel. Okay, next type of prebiotic, inulin. This is a type of fiber found naturally in certain roots and plants, including a lot of the vegetables on the Plant Paradox diet. It's also found in just like sugar. It's a sweetener made from chicory root that is primarily inulin. Okay, next, psyllium powder or husks. You can buy this powder on its own, but it's also the active ingredient in many laxatives like Metamucil. The next way to nurture your good gut bugs is to get enough vitamin D, D3. Even in Dr. Gundry's practice in sunny California, he finds that 80% of his patients are deficient in vitamin D3, yet it's essential to improving our gut health. It helps us grow enterocyte stem cells, which repair our gut wall barrier. As a rough guide, Dr. Gundry says to take 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 every day. Many people do need more, but it's best to do more under advice and observation of a doctor, so start with 5,000 IUs. Next, avoid most artificial sweeteners. People who want to lose weight are told by marketers that artificial sweeteners will help them do so. And on the surface, that does sound like a good idea. These sweeteners like aspartame, sucralose, and saccharin don't contain calories like regular sugar, and calories lead to weight gain, don't they? Unfortunately, it might not be that simple, because studies done on people consuming artificial sweeteners and diet drinks don't show any clear benefits. At best, the results are muddled, with some studies showing weight gain and others slight weight loss. One reason for this paradox may be emerging from the fog. Recent studies have shown that common artificial sweeteners change the balance of gut bacteria in our bodies. They cause an imbalance of gut bacteria that seem to assist weight gain, meaning like they thrive on sugars and sweets and junk food. So good alternative artificial sweeteners to use in moderation are sweet leaf stevia, just like sugar made from chicory root, and sugar alcohols like xylitol or erythritol. So here's a summary of lesson 7. Our intestinal tract is covered in hundreds of trillions of microbes or gut bugs. These not only digest food for us, but also control our cravings. If you have too many of those bad gut bugs, then you'll crave junk food, which can make losing weight very difficult. To nurture the good gut bugs, you should eat probiotics, especially found in fermented foods and yogurts, eat those resistant starches, take vitamin D3, and avoid most artificial sweeteners. Okay, and finally, lesson 8 from this book is to limit animal protein and fast to live longer and healthier. Scientists gave the name blue zones to small areas of the world where people live much longer and healthier than average. Like, they found an unusual percentage of people living older than 90 or 100 years old in certain areas, so they named these areas blue zones. These zones include Sardinia in Italy, Okinawa in Japan, Icaria in Greece, the Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, USA, and Nicoya in Costa Rica. Well, several years ago, author Dan Buettner wrote a book called The Blue Zones. He wanted to find out why people living in these zones were so healthy. At first glance, these communities didn't seem to have much in common. They're scattered all over the world and have wildly different cultures and religions. Yet, careful analysis reveals certain habits and tendencies that these blue zones all share. First, they eat mostly plant-based diets, which means they limit animal protein. For example, the Seventh-day Adventist community in California are strict vegetarians due to their religion, and they live much longer than their American neighbors, even in the same state. Some recent diet trends have championed meat and protein, notably Atkins, Paleo, and Keto. For example, if someone following the Paleo diet tries to eat like a caveman living in the Paleolithic era, they cut out all processed food, sugar, and carbs, which is a good idea. Yet they also start to eat, steaks and bacon, sometimes a lot of steaks and bacon and red meats. The argument being that our ancient ancestors would also have been roasting bacon on an open fire, therefore our body is optimized for this kind of diet. But Dr. Gundry says that in all likelihood, our ancestors probably weren't dining on buffalo steaks every night. Their diets would have mostly consisted of tubers, fruits, nuts, and smaller protein sources like fish, lizards, and insects, with the occasional hunt and kill. So what does science say about protein intake? Well, when you eat too much meat protein, or sugar for that matter, your liver produces a hormone called IGF-1, short for insulin-like growth factor. Studies on both animals and humans have shown that low IGF-1 levels are correlated to living longer and less chance of cancer. And that's why Dr. Gundry recommends eating no more than 2 4-ounce portions of animal protein per day. That's the size of about 2 decks of cards. Also, eat more of your protein from things like fish and shellfish, because the healthy omega-3 fats in those can give you better heart health and slower brain decline. It's probably no accident that people in the blue zones of Sardinia and Icaria often eat fish. Okay, next let's talk about fasting. Fasting gives your body a chance to rest. Eating less calories leads to a longer life. This fact has been proven true for every single animal the experiment has been proven on. Eating less calories equals a longer life. In particular, a 25-year study of rhesus monkeys found that monkeys who ate 30% fewer calories lived significantly longer than the control group. Other studies have shown fasting has many other health benefits like lower weight and less blood pressure. Maybe it's no surprise that people living in the blue zones are more likely to eat in moderation and to fast. For example, the Okinawa people in Japan have a rule called harahachibu, which means they stop eating when they feel 80% full rather than totally stuffed. And people living in the Icaria blue zone are mostly Greek Orthodox Christians, and they have many religious holidays throughout the year that require mandatory fasting. Here's a quote. "Fasting is the beginning and foundation of every spiritual activity." It's a quote from Simeon, the New Theologian. Dr. Gundry often recommends his patients fast 2 days per week, cutting their calories to around 600 on these 2 days. He says it's easiest to do this on Mondays and Thursdays, and he says his patients tend to lose 1 pound per week following this routine. So now, summary of lesson 8. High meat consumption can raise your IGF-1 levels, which are correlated to shorter lifespan and cancer. Therefore, you should eat no more than 2 4-ounce portions of animal protein per day, about the size of 2 decks of cards. Also, fasting a couple days per week can also help you to live longer and lose weight, according to science. Okay, so now in conclusion of this summary. Dr. Gundry's book, The Plant Paradox, contains a wealth of good advice for improving health, living longer, and losing weight. If you follow his diet, you will be healthier. There's no question about it. However, his core hypothesis of lectins being the cause of all disease has been roundly criticized by other doctors and nutrition authorities. So it seems like strictly eliminating all lectins may be the right path only for those with serious autoimmune illnesses. In the end of this book, Dr. Gundry actually does recommend that after you eliminate all those lectin foods at first, then you should slowly reintroduce them to your diet one by one in small amounts to see if you are sensitive, to see if you start getting some, you know, bad effects, bad symptoms, weight gain, anything else. Hope you enjoyed this summary from growth.me, and I'll talk to you again in the next one.